Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome. Well, I am very glad to be back in the studio with you live today after my month away, partly through travel and partly through laryngitis, which I hope is not going to afflict me anymore today. My voice has a habit of cutting out on me lately. So, Eric over there, Eric Ryder, hi. If I suddenly wave at you, you know.
I am standing by. I will jump in. I'll be your safety net today.
There you go. You know, my voice is gone. But I'm very pleased to kick off today's show with Dr. Coles. He's a leading super generalologist, and he's going to share an amazing story with us. It's a true story about extraordinary healing. And then coming up around 12:30, we'll talk with Dream Coach Joyce Chapman about something that's on my radar this month, and that's the importance of habits, how they can drive you to success, how they can drive you to new heights, or keep you stuck. And we'll end today's show with Brian McGeegan. I hope I said his name right. We'll find out later. He's from the Richard Hugo House. They have a new winter program starting tomorrow evening called Write Out. And it's a happy hour for writers, but it might not be the kind of happy hour you're thinking of. We'll find out more later on. First, let me introduce Dr. Stephen Coles. He is an MD and a PhD. He's the world's leading expert on supercentenarians. I can hardly say that word. He studies people of 110 plus. He's a visiting scholar at UCLA's Department of Computer Science and assistant researcher in the Department of Surgery at the UCLA David Geffen School of Medicine. He's the co-founder of Los Angeles Gerontology Research Group and the director of the Supercentenarian Research Foundation. Dr. Coles is also the author of 129 scientific papers and the author of the book we're talking about today. It's called Extraordinary Healing, How the Discoveries of Mirko Bolanski, the world's first green molecular biologist, can protect and restore your health. Dr. Coles, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Vicki. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I said, you know, at the beginning, this was such an amazing and extraordinary story, the journey of one man's quest to find healing. But before we get into this book, I want to just talk a little bit about the work you do, because that, too, is very interesting. Tell us what you do in your study of centenarians.
Well, I am a professor at UCLA, and I teach gerontology both at the undergraduate and the graduate level in the Institute for Molecular Biology, part of the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry here. And one of the things that I started doing about 15 years ago was to track some of the world's oldest old, you know, people who are not just centenarians at 100, but who are 110 or older, and as you said, we call them super centenarians. This is a very elite and special group of people because there are only 84 of them currently living around the world. And in the United States, we have about 25 of these people, and we are trying to enroll them in our study to find out what their secret is, because they don't really know themselves. When you ask them, can you explain why you've managed to live so long? They usually have a clever or witty answer, a joke, that because everybody asks them the same question.
Sure.
But if they tell the truth and they're honest, you know, they don't really understand why they were so successful in life. No, sometimes they'll say, oh, it's because I drank Jim Beam whiskey. And sometimes they'll say, it's because I never drank at all.
Right.
Or that I smoke cigars, or because I've never smoked. And when we get these contradictory answers, we know that that's not it.
Right.
Until we dig deeper and discover that the real thing that they have in common is long-lived relatives. So we have learned that their parents were long-lived, their siblings, their brothers and sisters, and their children probably will be long-lived as well.
Oh, interesting.
And so if it's inherited in the sort of family tree, that means that it must be somewhere in the DNA. And no one so far has attempted to sequence the DNA of these people because the price of sequencing technology has so far been prohibitively expensive. But lately it's become cheaper. And so we started about 6 months ago in a project collaborating with another one of my colleagues at Stanford University and another actually in Seattle, the Institute for Systems Biology, Professor Leroy Hood, who was my mentor when he was here years ago at Caltech. And as a result, you know, we are now getting blood samples from these people and analyzing their complete DNA sequence. And then we hope to find out what their real secret is.
Well, when you find that out, we'll definitely have to have you back.
Absolutely.
So this kind of, it all leads into the subject that we're going to talk about today, because you talk about extraordinary healing in this book. You tell the journey of one man and his studies. He was, I understand, the world's first green molecular biologist. Tell us a little bit about how you got interested in Balansky's work.
Well, I was talking with one of our colleagues here from Columbia University and reading about him in one of the articles that I saw in Healthy Living magazine, and I realized that he was like decades ahead of his time. He appreciated the mechanism of cancer and how environmental pollutants in the air, in the water, in the food, the pesticides that we consume can trigger the onset of cancer prematurely. And he not only wanted to make a correct association, but to do something about it. And in his laboratory at the Pasteur Institute in Paris, he started on a research program to identify any herbals or nutritional supplements that might actually interfere with the progression of a cancer that could become ultimately fatal if left unchecked.
Now, this was back in the 1940s, as I understand it, when he began at the Pasteur Institute.
Yes, that's right. And I wound up writing a brief biography of him that is now published, and I think you can get a copy on Amazon.com of his whole life history if you want to get into more details, because he did such an extraordinary job of identifying a couple of different herbal supplements and then the discovery that the mechanism was in a molecule called RNA. Now, I want your audience to appreciate that RNA is one of the essential molecules in making all of the proteins in our body, the structural proteins in our cells, and the enzymes that are important in facilitating all the metabolic and chemical reactions that take place to build the structures that are in our skin, in our hair, in all the organs of our body.
And what's the full term for RNA? I did read it somewhere, but I can't just put my hands on it.
It's a ribonucleic acid. I think everybody has heard of DNA.
Yeah.
Yeah, DNA is deoxyribonucleic acid. And one of my colleagues, James Watson, along with Francis Crick, got the Nobel Prize back in the early 50s for discovering the structure of DNA, because that's the main molecule that is in the nucleus of every one of the trillions of cells in our body that explains or as a blueprint for what that cell is supposed to do. And in the process, if you study molecular biology, the DNA creates a message in the form of an mRNA molecule that corkscrews its way out of the nucleus into the cytoplasm of the cell. And then as a result, becomes itself a blueprint for synthesizing protein. So the messenger RNA is really a critical player in making sure that all of the growth from the time when you were an embryo to a fetus to a newborn to an adolescent to an adult, all of that growth process requires synthesizing proteins that are indexed by messenger RNA. Now, it turns out that the DNA in our nucleus, and this is not well understood by most people, even by scientists, is extremely complex because only 2% of it is the genome that makes the messenger RNA. 98% of our genome in the DNA makes RNAs that are different. They're short RNAs. They're exclusively in the nucleus, and they never leave like the messenger does into the cytoplasm. And part of what they do is to control the expression of the 2% of the remaining genes that are on our 23 pairs of chromosomes.
Okay. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to ask you what that means to us.
Okay.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Dr. L. Stephen Coles. His book is called Extraordinary Healing, and we'll be right back with you.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com, and if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce@joycechapman.com.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. We're talking this segment with Dr. L. Stephen Coles. His new book is called Extraordinary Healing, How the Discoveries of Mirko Belansky, the world's first green molecular biologist, can protect and restore your health. And Dr. Coles, you gave us a great description of DNA and RNA before the break. And I know you want to break this down to what that means to us, the layman.
Exactly. The layman understands the word cancer because that's when the DNA makes mistakes in how a cell is supposed to participate in a tissue or an organ that is got a particular function, like your heart or your lungs or your kidneys. And when the DNA gets confused because of other molecules that have interdigitated themselves in the nucleus, they can start replicating at a very rapid rate and cause a tumor. And what we want to do is to regulate the division of cells very carefully in the body so as to maintain the architecture of the organ. You don't want to have, a liver tumor that grows to be 10 times the size of your liver, because obviously that is going to lead to dysfunction and pathology and ultimately illness and death. So how do we discover the mechanisms at the molecular level to control the division of cells? These are the ones that lead potentially to cancer. And even when they form a cancer, our immune system has a surveillance process to detect the presence of cancer cells and kill them off with macrophages and lymphocytes and leukocytes and so forth that are, you know, the cells that are created in your bone marrow.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could find a herbal or an RNA extract that would help the body to control the division of cells, that would be a wonderful therapy for various types of cancer, whether it's prostate cancer, lung cancer, or breast cancer for women, that are very commonplace. And it turns out that there are a couple of tropical shrubs that are medicinal. One of them is called Rauwolfia, and the other is called Pau Pereira. And these, along with RNA extracts, can help to control the replication of cells and prevent cancer.
Mm. So
that's really what Beljansky was looking for, and he certainly encountered some political problems when the president of France at the time developed cancer, and then the president decided to try out some of these new therapies. And he got into a lot of political hot water with his boss at the Pasteur Institute when that happened. When I was writing about this, I didn't realize myself about the controversy and how many French people went out in the streets of Paris and protested the fact that Beljansky was thrown out of the Institut Pasteur by his boss, who also happened to be a very famous scientist and Nobel Prize winner.
Well, this was quite fascinating, and this is a good portion of your book. You tell the story of this, how Beljansky treated Mitterrand.
President Mitterrand was treated and got better after just a couple of months of being on the treatment of Beljansky.
Now, didn't he eventually die, though, of the cancer? But he had a longer life?
Exactly. I mean, the cancer molecules that are involved in starting up or initiating cancers are in what we call the stem cells. And it's very hard to kill them all with conventional treatment like chemotherapy or radiotherapy or surgery. And so it's very common, even if you have a temporary reprieve, for there to be what is called recidivism, in which the cancer comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a sense, what happened is that President Mitterrand had an extra lease on life for a number of years before he finally succumbed to this disease.
And there was the controversy around this was quite extraordinary in France at the time. I read that the National Gendarmerie Intervention Group, which is kind of like a SWAT team, I guess, actually raided the laboratory of Beljansky.
Absolutely.
Arrested him at the age
of... With police, with guns.
Yeah.
70... It was shocking that he was displaced from the lab, and he had to move to another part of France to continue his research.
Mm-hmm. And then I also read, and this was quite alarming too, that they took back all the medication from the people who wanted the medication in France. They actually forced them to give up their medication too.
Yes, and that was a sad mistake. I mean, the French government is wonderful in many ways. You know, we owe a lot in this country, in the United States, to the traditions that were developed by the French in democracy. In fact, I went to medical school in Paris myself for 3 years before I came back to Stanford Medical School here in the United States. And it is interesting how mistakes can be made at all levels of government. When we read about changes in administrations, like in Nigeria and in Tunisia, you know, we see plenty of examples of this. Normally, in Western governments, they're much more stable.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and you don't see a change of leadership at the top, and this kind of controversy coming out about a president of the whole country.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean, there were people out in the streets protesting and all kinds of stuff. But when did it become, when did we start taking an interest in it here in the States? I read that there were 133 peer reviews and published studies on Beljanski's work on cancer. And once he'd got arrested, is that when we started paying attention to this?
Well, it really, I guess, was nothing that the normal public cares about until his daughter, named Sylvie, moved to the United States and opened up a company called Natural Source International in New York and wanted to continue the research of her father. And so she enlisted a few scientists at Columbia University. One in particular is a professor of urology, and his name is Aaron Katz. And he continued the research here in this country. And now the company that Sylvie created is selling some of these products to the public.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about why you wrote this book, Extraordinary Healing, why you felt it was important to get this story out. It's been described as first and foremost a story about hope and extraordinary perseverance by Beljanski.
Well, Beljanski was a pioneer, like I said, two or three decades ahead of his time,
mm.
because he discovered certain things empirically in the laboratory that we didn't appreciate at the time. And now that we understand much more about molecular biology, we can see, by connecting the dots, so to speak, the pathway of how his laboratory work inspired future researchers to now understand that the RNA molecule is so important in controlling the DNA, not just, you know, the influence of pollutants in the atmosphere and in our water and in our fruits and vegetables due to pesticides. All of this now is 30 years later, 40 years later, much more well understood. And at the time when Beljanski did this work, it was very controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't accepted by the scientific community.
And many of the people who were against his work were actually his peers, right? It's very, his competitors, if you like, who were, a lot of people were for his work, but then the ones who I think were the instigators in this, according to everything I've read, were the people he was directly competing against.
Well, I can assure you, even in my own research here at UCLA, there are other scientists all around the country who are my competitors and adversaries in trying to publish first, who understand the competitive nature of science.
Mm.
That's also one of its strong values, is that science ultimately weeds out the imposters and the frauds, and that's how science makes progress, by revealing to us in the long eye of history who were the real pioneers.
Yeah. Well, it's a very, very interesting story. What would you like to leave our listeners with today, Dr. Coles?
Well, if you are a patient with prostate cancer, like a man who has benign prostatic hypertrophy, or the beginnings of prostate cancer after a biopsy, then one of the Beljanski products may be what you need to look into. One of them is called Prostabel for prostate cancer, and the company, again, is called Natural Source International in New York, and they have a website. You can go find that out and look into it some more, because this is an example for me as a scientist of how basic science leads to the translation to real clinical medicine, where people in the real world are looking for cure.
Well, I thank you for being with us today. Thank you for sharing this story. I was amazed when I read this, and I think it's very well worth looking at and interesting. Thank you for being with us today.
You're very welcome.
And my guest again, Dr. L. Stephen Coles. He's an MD and PhD. You can find his book. It's called Extraordinary Healing, How the Discoveries of Mirko Beljanski, the world's first green molecular biologist, can protect and restore your health. Really interesting read for health practitioners and people who are just interested in this in general. And please do stay with us when we come back. We'll be joined by Joyce Chapman. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Maybe you're the same as me. We see things I'll never see.
You and I are gonna live forever. Gonna live forever.
Artist Menzel Joseph believes we may find world peace and balance through our individual awakenings. In his new book, he journeys through time to explore a creative response to the challenges of our time through drawing, painting, and sculpture. Join us next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair for Art and Survival in the 21st Century with Menzel Joseph.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Pause has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
Going against the grain has never been so much fun. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And next up, we have dream coach Joyce Chapman. You could say that Joyce was set for life. If you looked at her life, she'd raised her family in a long-term marriage. She'd been a committed educator for 30 years. Many folks would have just been looking forward to sailing into early retirement at that stage. But not Joyce. She still had dreams that she wanted to accomplish, and in her 50s went back to school. She became a multi-published author, and through her work has helped thousands of others discover and realize their own dreams. She's the author of the Live Your Dream series and is joining us now to talk about something that I know is critical to anyone's success, and that's habits. We're going to talk about habits. Welcome, Joyce. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. And I make a habit of listening to people just like you to inspire me.
And Happy New Year to you, since we haven't really spoken.
Happy New Year. Absolutely.
So I want to just talk about habits today, because I think, you know, the beginning of the year is that time when we often look at what happened last year and what's going to happen this year. And we're already into, what, the third week of January? November. See, I'm still back in November, in the third week of January. And I think at this point, toward the end of January, we can start flagging a little. Some of our best intentions start flagging a little. So let's look at the importance of habits in our life, and especially in our success and living our dream. And one of the things you talk about in your book, actually in chapter two, you say clear away obstructions to clear about your dream, to be clear about your dream. And you talk about, and I love this because it just really put it into perspective for me. If you were inviting a best friend to come stay with you for a month, you'd clear out a room, you'd make space in your home, you'd free up some time on your calendar, and you know, things that you normally would do, you'd probably push aside to set some, you know, time to welcome your friend and spend time with them. And you say that our new dream requires those exact same kind of adjustments. So let's talk about that a little, if you would.
Well, I so agree with those thoughts that I had many years ago, and I still find it so true. And one of the things that people often do, and you talked about, you know, the first of the year and good intentions. I don't know if you said those words, but it's like, okay, what do I need to clear away? And one of the, a long time ago, I went to a lecture, and I have no clue who said this, but I thought it was so wonderful, that we need to get out the vacuum and clean out our mind. It still makes me laugh when I think of that. It's like, okay, I'm going to get out my mind vacuum to clear out my life, you know, my mind, and if there's anything in the way of me being who I really want to be. So, and habits are a huge part of that.
Mm-hmm. So how do you define a habit?
How do I define a habit?
Mm-hmm.
What a great question. A habit is usually something that we just don't even think about, to tell you the truth,
mm-hmm.
and automatic. And that's, I think, when I first started to look at what was it going to take to live my dream, I did stop and say, okay, what are the habits I'm going to need, you know, rather than what are the habits I have, what are the habits I'm going to need in order to accomplish this dream, to realize this dream. So it's like, there are several different aspects of talking about habits, because it's like, okay, what are our habits, and are they, you know, leading us to where we want to go, or are they habits that are destructive for us? And I say in the book, and you probably have noticed this, Vicki, habits that sabotage, you know, habits that get in your way of being who you say you want to be.
Right. So habits can be not just applications, not just things that we do, such as, I don't know, flopping in front of the TV after work or whatever.
That's a habit many people have.
Or a good habit would be, you know, taking a long walk. but they're also, it's the way we think. We have an habitual way of thinking too. And that's what you're talking about when we need to clear the mind, right?
Uh-huh. And that's something that I had fun doing when I knew that we were going to talk about habits, is I made a list. You know me and my list.
Mm-hmm.
I love to make lists, and so I wrote the habits I have that inspire me are, can I read them?
Yes, please.
I never give up habit. I have a habit of never giving up. I have a habit of planning my days. I buy only what I know I want to eat to have in my cupboards and refrigerator. I read a lot. I journal daily, and I trust that I know by trusting that I know. I choose to surround myself with other dreamers. I know I love to create, so I make it a habit. I love to empower myself and others, so I make it a habit. I love to learn, grow, and discover, and I love to choose joy. And those are some of the habits that I like to talk about.
Mm-hmm. So how do we get these instilled into us? Because you gave me a list of habits that sabotage.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I think most of us, if we're honest with ourselves, know that, you know, we can procrastinate or be disorganized. We can overcommit ourselves. We can get into a phase of mindless eating. We can say yes when we mean no. I mean, these are all negative habits that sabotage us. So how do we turn these around? Let's say that I have a habit of saying yes when I mean no.
Mm-hmm.
How do I turn that around?
Well, one of the things, and I think you already, you know, said it in a way, Vicki, but the first aspect is to look at, you know, is it a habit that sabotages me? And then, you know, go from that, as you said, saying yes when I mean no. It's almost screaming at yourself. Maybe not out loud and not in any way judgmental, but no, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to say, yes, I'll come and meet you for lunch if I don't want to meet that person for lunch. And it's like, okay, getting to be, and bottom line is to be conscious. 100% conscious at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes...
And that's a whole habit.
That takes consciousness.
I was going to say, that's a whole habit in itself, isn't it?
It's like, oh, okay, I'm going to be awake, you know, and also step out of any complaining. Like, you know, don't beat yourself up, I say to many people. Don't beat yourself up. Just change.
Just change, yes. Okay.
And with that, we'll leave you.
you talk about new habits to support your dream, and one of the answers, I mean, I love this because I don't always answer my phone when I'm working. That's uh-huh. I figure that's why I have voicemail and that, an off button on my cell phone. And but it's amazing how many people I run into or who come into my studio and go, do you want me to answer the phone? And I'm like, no, it can go to voicemail while we're meeting. And that's one of the things that I think that gets in a lot of people's way. If you look at people around town, because we're always on the cell phone.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's something that, again, the consciousness is that, you know, if your cell phone vibrates or rings, and do you have to answer it at that moment? And sometimes I'll be honest, I'll be a little bit annoyed, like I'm not as important as the person that's calling if you're going to answer that phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, I want to be, you know, if I'm present with somebody, I want to be with that person. And if they set it up like I'm going to get some calls, I have to take it, that's a whole different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely is replacing, you know, a habit that isn't productive for you to a habit that is productive for you.
Now, I know you are big on celebrating and recognizing when we've done something good. So if we catch ourselves, and they do say it takes, you know, I've read conflicting studies on this lately because it always used to be it takes 21 days to make a habit. But lately I've read conflicting studies on that say it takes 28 days, or it just depends on you how long it takes. But when we catch ourselves practicing our new habit, and it is a practice, what should we do?
I think, well, the thing I do, Vicki, which I know works, is to write it down. That's I know that you know this about me, and maybe our listeners do as well. It's like, I believe in keeping a journal, because by keeping a journal and writing it down, it just simply becomes more real. You know, it's not just a thought floating around. Oh, that is a nice thought.
Right.
Which I absolutely do at times, you know, but it's like, oh, okay, that's a nice thought, and I want to keep that thought.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like truly, and that is what leads to being in the moment, living in the flow, and, you know, being joyful and celebrating instead of being the victim or being, you know, at the result of somebody else's actions or thinking.
Mm.
Live in choice.
Live in choice, yes. And you, one of the questions you have in the Q&A section of that chapter is that this person says it's fairly easy for me to do the mind cleaning, but I'm having trouble reframing the old and coming out with the new habits and beliefs. What do you suggest?
One of the things, I really like the word or the thought, the concept of reframing, because I believe that that is what, you know, we're always changing and growing, even whether we like it or not. And that by reframing it, you're just really choosing something that's, you know, going to be in alignment with who you say you want to be. And I know I say that a lot, but the truth is I don't meet crowds of people that are being who they want to be. So it's like, okay, I'm going to encourage us all to be the person we want to be. And even be better than that person we want to be, you know, to keep that the idea that if I want to and need to replace something, I can, you know.
Right.
If I have a belief that no longer serves me, I can replace that belief with a new belief.
Right, right.
If I have a habit that no longer serves me, I can replace that habit.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure about how many days it takes. I do know that I've changed, you know, a quote-unquote negative habit over in a moment, because I just decided, you know, I'm sick and tired of this. I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think there are times when you can do that. You just get to a point where it's like, you know what, I'm not doing that anymore. Or, you know what, I'm going to start doing ABC, whatever it is, and then and then jumping straight into it. Uh-huh. It is a mindset.
It is a mindset. Definitely is a mindset. It definitely sometimes need to be reframed.
Yeah.
You know, I remember many years ago somebody was talking about, oh, gosh, it was so long ago, but the reprogramming of oneself. And I went, gee, that sounds kind of scary.
Yeah.
I remember, this was a long time ago. But now I just go, how fun to know that we can reprogram ourselves. You know, we don't have to live in maybe a bad situation that occurred in our life. We can, you know, move on from that and recreate. As you know, Vicki, I love the thinking of being creative.
Right, right. And creative doesn't have to mean that we're, you know, the next Michelangelo.
No. That's so wonderful that you said that, because, no, it means creative from your own point of view.
Yeah.
You know, if you love arranging flowers, then arrange flowers. You know, I realized that I think I've said this to you before, Vicki, but it's like, oh, to claim that I was a writer was a huge step, you know. It's like, well, I know I'm an author. I know I have incredibly good ideas that, you know, can share with people and everything, but to claim that I was a writer was a huge step for me. It's like, okay. I can accept that. I write, so then I'm a writer.
Right. There you go. There you go. You write, so you write. Well, that's a good segue, because coming up next, we have somebody from the Richard Hugo House with us, which is a writer's center. I know you won't know this, Joyce, but it's a writer's center up here in Seattle. So before I close out with you today, Joyce, a quick thought that you'd like to leave our listeners with today about habits.
I think the invitation to make living your dream a habit. You know, and doing anything and everything that was within your ability and power to make that happen.
All right. Sounds great. And we can find out more about Joyce at joycechapman.com. I know you've got some online classes there. Can people find out about that there? Quick yes or no, Joyce?
Sure can.
Okay. JoyceChapman.com is where you can find out information about Joyce's online classes and all of her books, including the Live Your Dream series. Thanks for being with us, Joyce, and please do stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate, making a difference, one word at a time.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. And this is our last segment today on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. I'm talking with Brian McGuigan from the Richard Hugo House over in West Seattle. And he's going to tell us about a new program that's actually beginning tomorrow. But I'm going to bring Brian on and he can tell you a little bit about himself, too. Brian, welcome. Welcome.
Hi, Vicki.
So tell us a little bit about you, first of all, and what you do. Well, first of all, I guess we should say what the Richard Hugo House is for people who don't know.
Sure, sure. Richard Hugo House is a nonprofit literary center on Capitol Hill. We offer classes, residencies, and resources for writers and readers, and we're named after White Center poet Richard Hugo.
It's on Capitol Hill. I thought, I keep saying West Seattle because I thought it was in West Seattle.
Because Hugo's originally from.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but the actual center's in Capitol Hill.
Yep.
And so what do you do at Richard Hugo House?
I'm the marketing and events director at the house, which basically means I drink a lot of coffee and talk about how great Hugo House is.
Okay. So, tell us how great it is. Well, you put together a lot of programs, I know, for writers, and you deal with writers of all genres and writers of all ages and writers of all skill levels, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so you put together these programs, and I know you've got one starting tomorrow, so let's talk about that one first, since it starts tomorrow.
Sure, sure. Well, the program tomorrow is called Write Out, and it's a happy hour for writers. And basically, the concept behind it was I'm a writer myself, and I have trouble finding time to write between working here 40-plus hours a week, being married, having a house, and really wanted to find a time to be able to just sit down and write. I'm also someone who writes a lot in coffee shops and bars, and usually I'm one of a couple of people in a certain coffee shop that I go to that writes, and everyone else is, on Facebook or checking their email or having conversations.
Right.
It's pretty lonely to sort of be off in my own world writing, and I felt like Hugo House is a place that really encourages community for writers, and I wanted to develop a program where writers could come together, really do what we should do more of, which is write, but also have community of other writers sort of helping each other out, cheering each other on, and just being able to identify with other people, being able to say we're all writers together.
Yeah. I don't think non-writers realize how lonely it can be. I mean, it can be very absorbing. You just get lost in it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times when a little company would be very welcome.
It's really true. You go home or wherever you happen to write, and you just kind of cordon your mind off and get down to what you're doing. And it's really hard work. It's fun. It's creative. But, if you're revising something, it's a lot of time and it's a lot of energy. And I think the loneliness only makes it worse sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of want to be able to share that experience with somebody else. And I know for me, my wife is not a writer, and she's sick of hearing me talk about my work.
Yeah.
It's nice to have somebody else to share that with.
Right, right. Oh, definitely. And so tell us a little bit about how this works. First of all, this is a free program. I mean, we don't get much for free these days, so I want to make sure we say this is a free program.
Yeah.
And it's going to be Tuesday evenings tomorrow, January 25th, February 22nd, and March 22nd, between 6 and 8 p.m. at Richard Hugo House. So tell us how it's going to work.
Sure. We have a really great cabaret space that also has a cafe and bar in it. We can fit about, anywhere from 80 to 100 people. And we're going to have power strips out. We're going to have pen and paper available so people can just come and set up at our tables. They can get a drink at the bar. They can have some coffee if they'd like. We do have some snacks, too, and just sit down and write. We're going to have a local poet and Copper Canyon Press poet, Ed Skoog, joining us, and he's going to offer a writing prompt that everyone can start from if they want to write something new. And he's also going to be here writing with us.
Wow.
And each month we'll have a featured poet or featured writer who will give the writing prompt and then be on hand writing with us.
Okay. And did you already say who's going to be there tomorrow?
Ed Skoog.
Okay. And it has a real bar?
No, yes.
Did not know that.
Wine, beer, and select spirits. So it's not quite a full bar, but we have a lot of offerings.
Okay. So, that is a good offering there. So what kind of skill level are you looking at for this particular program?
Anyone can come to it. It's sort of like what the woman in the previous segment, Joyce, I think her name was, said mm-hmm. about being able to say she was a writer. And that's kind of what Hugo House is. It's a place that's open to writers of all ages, all backgrounds, all genres.
Mm.
And anyone can come tomorrow night and write with us. You don't have to be published, and you don't have to be not published to come.
Mm.
It's just open to anyone who has a new project that they want to work on, wants to start something new, or has an existing project they're already working on, just needs 2 hours to write and be around other people who are writing.
Yeah, and provide a little accountability there if you, you know, you commit yourself to showing up. I remember years ago when I lived in San Diego and I went to my first writer's workshop, and this was like, gosh, I don't know, 18 years ago. And the instructor was going around the classroom and said to everyone, you know, what do you do and why are you here? And one girl said, well, I decided it was time to come out of the closet because she'd been writing secretly, but was afraid to tell anyone.
And that moment when you can say, I am a writer, is such a powerful moment. And to be able to say that among other people who feel the same way, I think is gives you that sense of community again.
Yeah. And I know for many people, and for some, even if they're really experienced writers, this never goes away. They don't like sharing their work with other mm-hmm. people. So there's no pressure there to share your work with anyone, correct?
No, not at all. You don't. There's no sharing opportunity. If you want to stick around after 8 o'clock and read to each other and share your work with other people there, that's totally fine. But there isn't going to be like an around the room, everyone reads what they've been working on thing, because I know a lot of people, like myself included, just don't come up with something right away. You
yeah.
know, sometimes it takes some time to get something great on the page.
Right, right. And there are no rules, I understand.
Nope, no rules at all. Just come and be ready to write. That's it.
Mm. So, and this is going on for 3 Tuesdays. So if people are interested and want to come along, do they just show up? Is there a number they need to call, Brian?
No, not at all. If they'd like to call and just confirm that everything is going to happen here on that night, they can. The number at the house is 206-322-7030. But it's open to anyone. You don't have to RSVP. You can just show up anytime between 6 and 8 p.m. tomorrow night, or on Tuesday, February 22nd, or Tuesday, March 22nd, and write with us.
Okay. And again, the telephone number there is 206-322-7030. And so tell us a little bit about the writers. You have a writer in residence there. Do you have more than one, just one?
No, we have 2 writers in residence. They're both available to meet with anyone in the community free of charge. They're here 5 hours a week, though they do meet with people by appointment only, so you'd have to go to our website at hugohouse.org to make an appointment with them. The 2 writers-in-residence that we have now are novelist Ryan Boudinot. He's the author of a short story collection called The Littlest Hitler and a novel that came out last year called Misconception, which was nominated for the Penn Award. And the other writer-in-residence is Karen Finney Frock, who's a slam legend. She's been involved in the poetry spoken word and slam poetry community for a number of years here, and is now publishing a novel of young adult fiction on Penguin Viking that comes out next year. So she's got a couple of different facets that she can work with. She's mainly poetry and YA, and Ryan is nonfiction and fiction.
Well, very good. It all sounds very interesting, and I want to thank you for being with us and sharing this information with our listeners today, Brian.
Thanks for having me, Vicky. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And again, you can find out more information at hugohouse.org, and it's in Capitol Hill, not West Seattle, as I said at the beginning of the show. And the number to call if you're interested to find out more information is 206-322-7030. And I want to thank, of course, Brian McGinn for being with us and telling us all about this from Richard Hugo House. And before we go today, I have to say a big, huge thank you to Eric Ryder over there, who took care of things while I was gone, either through travel or through laryngitis. Thank you, Eric. It was such a relief to be able to just email you since I couldn't talk. And you just picked up from there. I appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. And so glad you've got your voice back and glad to have you back here in the new year.
So. I know. Did you make any New Year's resolutions? Because I haven't really had a chance to talk with you.
You know, yeah, I've forgotten them already.
See,
I'm being put on the spot.
what did I say at the beginning of Joyce's segment? By the time we get to like the third or fourth week in January, who the heck, you know, who remembers what
right.
the heck we were going to do on...
Oh, I remember what it was. To make 2011 a better year than 2010 was.
Well, that's very good. That's
yes.
kind of wide and expansive and
exactly.
very generic. And as long as it feels better, I guess it's better. Right,
right exactly.
Oh, well, that's good. And what else is new in your life? Anything? Since I haven't seen you since December?
Well, I don't know. Still playing with the band and making progress with that and hoping to go back to your homeland in July and possibly play a show again there. So
That will be fun. Well, thanks again. And I want to thank all of you for listening in today. If you want to, I think our website is down right now. There's a problem with the server, but you can call me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617 if you want information on any of today's guests. And we'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong.